The views and discussion expressed on this program do not necessarily represent those of the hosts of the program. WMKV, Maple Knoll Communities, WLHS, the Lakota Local School District, or staff and management. The information and advice presented are educational in nature and not intended to be taken as specific legal, accounting, or other professional advice. Always consult with your own legal, accounting, or other professional before making any investment. Welcome to Real Life Real Estate Investing, a show to help you gain financial freedom by investing in real estate. Brought to you by the Real Estate Investors Association of Cincinnati and the Ohio Real Estate Investors Association. You're listening to Real Life Real Estate Investing on WMKV, WLHS, and the Maple Knoll Radio Network. And now your host, Vina Jones Cox.
Good afternoon. I am Vina Jones Cox, and this is Real Life Real Estate Investing, where every week we work our fingers to the bone to make sure you get the information and inspiration you need to start or grow your own real estate investing business. Today's show is going to feel a little weird to longtime Real Life Real Estate listeners, because we're going to talk about, or maybe the word is debate, I don't know, we'll see, why it's good, and in fact maybe better than anything else, to borrow money from banks to buy real estate. I know, it sounds like I can barely get the words out of my mouth, doesn't it? Well, this all started last week with a debate between myself and Robert Mohan about how creative financing and private financing was too complicated and it had too many moving parts, and why didn't people just all go borrow money from banks, because that was the best way to do things. And after 10 minutes of that debate, I said, you know, other people should be listening in on this. Shut up and come on the radio next week. And then everybody can listen to it. Robert is a longtime single-family home investor. He is also the executive director of the Real Estate Investors of Nashville, better known as REIN or RAIN or REIN. It depends on how you want to pronounce R-E-I-N. He's actually joining us from an event out in Colorado from a hotel room somewhere. Robert, welcome to Real Life Real Estate.
Thank you. Thank you. It's good to be here.
How are those mountains treating your sinuses up there, Robert?
Well, it's an adjustment, I'll just say.
Yeah, we might as well warn people that there might be a little coughing and whatnot that happens over the course of the show, because that's what I do when I have a cold. I just come in and I'm like, yeah, the reason I sound like this is I've got a cold. So, yeah. Why do you hate creative finance and private financing?
There are so many things that go into a person making a decision to do something. For instance, let's say I get a fantastic idea. Maybe I want to loan my friend some money, and we're talking, my friend and I, and it's a fantastic idea. And then I go home, and I run it by my wife, and she says, "You're crazy." And the deal just goes out the window. So one of the things I have with the creative is there are factors, there's emotions, there are other decisions, other outside forces that I can neither control nor maybe even predict, mm-hmm. that sometimes can mess up the great deal that I thought I had in my hand, mm-hmm. all because of these outside forces. And I just don't have that with banks. They're more predictable. I understand the rules. I can learn the rules and follow those rules.
Well, you understand the rules because they set them.
So,
and then they tell you what they are. And in like creative deals,
yeah.
and private deals, we can kind of work together.
Do you want to play Monopoly without knowing the rules? I don't want to play Monopoly, but imagine Scrabble. But I only know the rules and you don't. How will you know?
You've never played Monopoly with me, or you would know that there is absolutely... Monopoly is absolutely more fun when you play by real world rules instead of the ones in the box.
But there's variables, there's disorganization. It's extra, for me, the challenge I've seen, and I've seen from others too, but I'll just speak about myself. And of course, I'm not giving legal, accounting, or any other professional advice of any sort with these comments. This is opinions and friendly debate here. The disorganization, it just takes longer. The positive can be, of course, that you can grow with that person and maybe build something long-term, but okay, I'm already doing that over here through a well-defined process, so it seems easier to me.
I have often suspected that people who say to me, why do you guys spend all this time learning and talking about all these crazy ways to do deals? Why don't you just go to the bank and get money? That's what I do. That there is an element in it of, it's just easier for me to go to the bank. Would you say that's probably true of you?
I would definitely agree with that. There are rules. They're defined. I can learn the rules. And I've learned to have a comfort zone where I will just ask for the rules. Mm-hmm. For example, if you go get an FHA loan, the first thing I'll just say is, give me the list of what you want. I don't even want to go meet with you necessarily before I see the list. And if they don't have a list, then I know I don't want to work with them because they are disorganized. They don't have their stuff together. Wait a minute. That's one of the things I didn't like. So if they're already ready to go, they're ready to do business and make a loan. I love that. Okay. So I'm looking for a certain amount of time savings and efficiency on my part because my role is to make decisions and get things done, not necessarily spend a lot of time talking and pushing paperwork around.
Okay, so I can see where, to a certain kind of like engineering mind, it might just seem like the benefits of being able to walk in and saying, show me your rate sheets, show me your requirements, show me your costs, might just seem so much easier than getting better financing that the bank will offer that. And also the focus on, okay, I don't want to worry about the financing. I want to worry about what happens next. I want to worry about the rehab. I want to worry about the, you know, getting the properties managed properly. I want to get worried about getting the Airbnb. I guess I can kind of see that. But I think the question on the flip side is there's a lot of institutions that will loan you money and will tell you those things, right? There's hard money lenders. There's DSCR lenders. And you really like actual banks with brick and mortar. Why is that?
I do. Terms usually are more favorable, and I have built the relationships with time to be ready before the deal actually occurs. One thing, I hadn't really thought of this until we had our little friendly debate the other day, but every time I get a loan, today's loan is so I can get an even better loan tomorrow. So everything I'm doing today is all building on the future because you never know when you're going to want more money for something else. For example, maybe you need a car loan or a personal loan or a vacation loan or a renovation loan for your personal residence, or you want to buy something that you need a line of credit for. Banks are multi-purpose tools. They cannot just do real estate investing loans. So sometimes people will say, oh, I like the credit union. Great, credit unions are fine institutions, but for me, I won't even open up a bank account if I don't learn that they can help me in all the areas that I want to work with them in. It's not worth the effort. You want to have a bank account and then begin the relationship with someone that sees the long game, and the long game may be 3 to 5 years. It may not be 20. Sometimes banks fill up with the type of loans that they can do because they're regulated by the government, the powers that be in this country. So I want to build a relationship for that long term, for that long game. And then when I come in there and ask, well, they already know who I am because I've already gotten the stuff together and I'm not scrambling at the last moment to put it together and then show I'm disorganized. And if I'm disorganized in this area of my life, where else might I be disorganized? So I'm sending a message by being organized and prepared that I'm going to see it through. I'm going to pay you when I said, and you're not going to have any problems out of me. Today's loan is for tomorrow's better loan.
Okay.
Today's relationship building is for tomorrow's better loan.
We are going to have to seriously unpack all of that after the break, starting with relationship with an institution. In the meantime, I want to invite listeners to participate in the debate, ask questions about banks. I'm remembering that we're on public radio and we can't really like say this is the best bank to go to, but anyway, our number here in the studio is 877-772-9658. Again, 877-772-9658. Or you can send an email to our new Real Life Real Estate account, which is vinaradio@gmail.com. Welcome back to Real Life Real Estate Investing. I'm your host, Vina Jones Cox, and my guest today is Robert Mohan, who is a very long time single family home investor down in Tennessee and also a little bit in Alabama, and who has built his entire portfolio from day one on bank financing, and who had the guts to debate me. Can you imagine? Can you imagine trying to debate me about a real estate issue? Like, are you going to win that debate, really? No, Robert thought he could. So now we're carrying it out on the radio to the general public and also taking your questions at 877-772-9658. Again, 877-772-9658. Or at vinaradio@gmail.com. And if we could kind of limit the questions today or comments to banks versus other kinds of lenders or specific questions about how do I do these things Robert is telling me to do, because I took several notes, Robert. I just sketched down words based on your last couple of paragraphs. I heard write banks. I heard build relationships. I heard be organized. And I want to talk more about each one of those things individually. You said very specifically that you even pick the banks you're going to have a checking account with based on are they going to be able to do you further good in your business. So I gather that's... You're not just like walking into one of the big international banks and saying, hey, do you guys do loans? There's something in there about right banks. What's the right bank?
Well, the first rule bankers are taught when they go to banker school, and there is a banker school, is get the checking account. They're all taught that having the customer's checking account there is the first step to a lifetime customer. Now, in their world, they want you forever. They actually are taught that you can have customers forever. In fact, my grandmother was a customer of literally her same branch forever, her entire life. She lived in that town on that street. It even got bought out. She still banked at that branch because she knew those people. That is how a lot of people think. Think about how often you change banks. Most people don't do it that often. So if they can get that checking account, that's gold for them. And that's why you're getting those offers in the mail that say, open up a bank account, $200, open up a bank account and do these qualifying activities, and that's in the fine print, and get $500. The reason is they got you for life. It's worth $200 or $500 or whatever they're throwing out there to get that. But for me to go through all that effort of the checks and the background checks, the Patriot Act, the check systems, whatever they run, to get you in their system, I don't want to do that if there's no chance of us being able to do any real estate business later or lines of credit that are favorable. Now, you mentioned a big, large international bank. If I'm doing international money transmitting, if I'm doing international letters of credit, things of that nature, those places are great. But for what I do, what we might be talking about here, most of the listeners, the big, large international bank may not be that interested in us unless you're in their private client area. And if you're in their private client area, you'll know it. They probably called you and came after you because they've learned who you are, and they will do different things in private client than the general public gets access to. But if you don't know what that is at that bank, you're not in it. I mean, don't take that wrong. It's just they will come to you. It's sort of an invitation-only thing. Mm-hmm.
So, other than they have, okay, so let's start here. There are some banks that they just don't really like to do any kind of real estate loan whatsoever. They'll do them, but they'll only do them if they can sell them to Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac, or like it's like a, yeah, give us enough points and closing costs and we'll be happy to. They're not going after any kind of real estate, not investment real estate, not single family homes, not apartments, not commercial, not anything. Right. So what, I guess, how do I know, like if I go into any bank, a smaller bank, how do I know what questions to ask to know if we're going to be able to do business together later?
Well, first decide what's your goal. Is one paid off rental house going to let you be set for life with your current plan? And if yes, then great. All you need is one other loan. House you live in, maybe, and you could even rent that, not even own it, and then get one paid off rental. If that's fine, then one house is fine. But in my opinion, I'm going to need more than one paid off house or one financed house. I may need several. So I want a lender that's going to be willing to do repeat business and loves non-owner occupied real estate. So I would go to my local investors gathering and say, hey, when you want to go to a new lender, what questions do you ask them? How do you know if they're a right fit for you? And shut up and listen. Start writing as fast as you can. Mm-hmm. Now, don't record it because they're not going to tell you the real stuff. It's my experience. I've seen people at this conference where I am now recording stuff. Well, that limits people. If you just take notes, that's different. People will be a little more free with you. So what are the things they ask for? Because you can't think up everything there is. You could also go with somebody when they go talk to their banker. That's definitely a strategy, but probably just getting the questions in advance and going in and talking to two or three, or saying, who do you like and why do you like them? Not just get a couple of names. Hey, I like A bank or B bank or C bank. Well, tell me why you like them. Well, I like them because they gave me a free T-shirt when I opened the account. Okay, well, that doesn't help me get a paid off house one day. That doesn't help me get five extra mortgages. Tell me why. Well, my buddy Joe over there really takes care of me, and I can get stuff underwritten in 14 to 21 days. If that meets my criteria, then would you give me a warm introduction to Joe? Well, yes, I would.
Mm-hmm. So, great. So you're looking for beyond just what bank is it and to who do you work with at that bank?
Yes, because you'll have – if your goal is to have multiple houses over time or multiple apartments or multiple commercial buildings, you're going to have multiple bank relationships. Start to get one, but learn to do that because over time, bank number one will fill up. They'll get acquired. Something will change over there. The management will get ousted or they'll move on somewhere else and there will be a new sheriff in town and things will be different. But I've learned if you stay in the same town and you get to know the bankers in your town, they stay in your town also. They'll move around to different banks, but they'll stay in banking. And if you've built a relationship with that person and they can help you at their new bank where they're working now, well, they already know you. And that person at that bank, that employee of the bank, is your best advocate to get the loan approved, to get the best rates and fees possible. They are selling your deal to their approval committee, to their boss, to their manager. You want to build a relationship with that person because they're your best friend when it comes to talking to their manager, their decision maker.
Okay, well, a lot of banks, particularly the larger ones, and even to some extent the – I'm seeing more and more what I used to consider small banks. Like they have a couple of branches that – actually, it turns out when you look under the hood, they're all owned by a bigger consortium. they kept their local name, but they actually they're following the rules of their owners, which own five or six of these little regional banks. It sounds like I lost where I was going with that. Oh, you said approval committee, because a lot of the consortiums and the big banks, they don't really have approval committees. They have brokers who work for the bank and who get paid for closing loans and who, yes, want to get your loan closed, but what they're really doing is they're just following the rules that Fannie Mae has laid out, right? Either you fit in that box or you don't fit in that box. It sounds like you're partly looking for banks that have some sort of a financial product that is off menu where it comes to here's Fannie Mae's requirements, here's Freddie Mac's requirements. We have this other thing that we do, but it has to go to the approval committee. Is that accurate?
Okay, so that statement assumes that all loans are the same, and that's just not true. Fannie loans are even different than Freddie loans, but there are other loans that have nothing to do with Fannie and Freddie. There are loans that the bank itself can set the underwriting terms for. They may keep the loan on their books and not sell it off. Those are called portfolio lenders. I found those to be very cooperative to me and very free with helping me understand their guidelines because they only make profit when they write loans. If they don't loan money, they don't make a profit. How else are they going to make money? It's not from clearing your checks in your little checking account. They make a few pennies per check. You're not going to pay for buildings and payroll and all those ATMs that cost $5,000 or $10,000 a piece, 3 and 5 pennies at a time clearing checks. You've got to write loans that have fees and points and monthly payments and interest. They want to make loans to businesses, to small businesses, large businesses, commercial, industrial. Their whole reason for existing in this country is to make a profit through loans. And all we're doing is being aware of it and capitalizing on it by looking for the ones that match with our needs.
Okay. Well, big banks don't really make money loaning money anymore. But most of the big banks, and maybe there's this private department I haven't been invited to, but most big banks, if they're making loans on real estate, they make money closing the loan, and then they sell the loan to Fannie or Freddie or Wall Street or somebody. And then if they're lucky, they might make money servicing the loan, but they often don't get the servicing. So is it the case, if I'm reading between the lines here, that portfolio loan equals probably a small bank?
Most likely. There could be some exceptions. But I tend to look for banks that have $10 billion, with a B, like boy, $10 billion in assets and less. That's my first stop. And you can determine that pretty easily with an internet search. The small startups, you may not even notice those, but new banks are being started up all the time. Of course, banks are being bought. And when banks are bought, by the way, the old staff, the old management frequently is terminated or given a buyout, and they have to sit out for a little while. And then what do? Well, they go back to what they know. They start up a bank. And if you happen to see one of those coming into the market, go in there and ask them. Remember how they make profit, loaning money. Wouldn't it be cool if you're customer number one or number 10 or whatever, and you're one of their loyal first customers? But that's a small little startup bank. There's risk in that. I've done that. Sometimes the computer systems have a little glitch. And if you're patient with them and they'll work through it, it'll be fine. And man, I've gotten some great terms doing that, working with a startup bank.
When we come back from the break, the very first question I'm going to ask you, because you keep saying go in and ask, go in and do this, go in. The very first question I'm going to ask you is go in and ask who. Our numbers here in the studio, if you have any questions about our conversation today about the benefits of just borrowing money from banks like normal people, give us a call at 877-772-9658 or send it to our new email address, vinaradio@gmail.com. Welcome back to Real Life Real Estate Investing. I'm your host, Vina Jones-Cox, talking today to Robert Mohan, Executive Director of the Real Estate Investors of Nashville, and also a real estate investor who loves banks. He wants to marry banks. And I don't quite get it, because I find that private financing and creative financing with sellers and partners and all of that sort of thing is, I don't know, less annoying and more like flexible. And I mean, I will admit, Robert, that thing you said about having to learn it and then somebody's got to do the paperwork and it's not like just the bank's attorney generating it or the title company generating it. That's all true. But you know, you can learn it well enough that that's not a problem. And you can, yeah, you can hire your own lawyer to generate that sort of stuff.
Mm-hmm. And not all people eat red meat. Some people are vegan. I mean, we all have different strokes for different folks.
Yes, I guess maybe there's some divide here between people who have that more kind of let's make it easy and get it over with mindset versus the people with me that are like, no, let's make it more interesting mindset, which is probably one of the reasons that I like private and creative financing so much. So we're going to go to listener questions in a minute, but you have said several times something about walk in and introduce yourself, walk in and ask what they have, walk in and are you literally like asking the teller, or is this something more formal than that?
No, I walk in and ask the teller. The people you're going to end up talking to are what I would call the people on the carpet. In a lot of banks, they'll have a tile area or some kind of a hard surface where the tellers are, because it gets a lot of foot traffic from the front door to the teller line. And sometimes people come in there with dirty shoes or whatever. The people on the carpet are the ones that are going to be dealing with your loans. They're going to be dealing with account openings. They're going to be able to answer questions about rates and fees and terms and what types of things you need. And it's also one of the tests to find out if that person in that particular branch you went to has the info or not. And if they don't, and they refer you off to someone else who may call you tomorrow, that may or may not be the bank for you. Because if someone else off somewhere else in another place, another time, well, how will you build a relationship with them? It's possible you can. Maybe they rotate through multiple branches and they'll be there next Tuesday and you can meet with them then. That's fine. Sometimes that's distributed work, distributed employees, distributed workforce is going on. So that's not the end of the world like it used to be. So I would go in and just start asking questions. It's no different than if I went in to buy furniture or a car. Hey, you guys sell cars here? Well, what am I instantly saying? I'm here to buy a car. Hey, do you sell furniture here? Great. Who can I talk to? Just break the ice and start talking. Just, they're people too. They've got kids. They've got school. They've got 401k retirement concerns. They're people too, just like us. We all have the same concerns, the same needs. So go in and just start up a conversation and say, do you all loan money on rental properties? And then listen. Take it from there.
So you're doing this in advance of actually needing a loan on a rental property.
I like to. If I'm committed to actually doing a real estate deal and not just thinking, well, even if I was thinking about it, I did that. Now, I will say the first couple of loans that I did, I went to a broker. And that's a third party that it turns out he was shopping my deal to local banks. And he told me that. That's one of the best ways to find out is just ask questions. And he said, yeah, we're shopping your deal too. And he named this bank. And I said, well, how does that work? He says, well, we do all the underwriting. We get all your paperwork and package it up in a neat little box. And then they approve it and they send us the money. And we take a little fee for doing it. Huh. So I did a couple there. And then I found out, well, I could just go in and talk to the bank myself and maybe save myself some time and effort and money and fees and just go straight to the source. Mm-hmm. So that's really how it started. I started with a broker, a third party, learned the trade, learned what types of loans there were, because a broker may can get you an 80-20, 100% loan, where you go into the bank and they want 20 or 25% down. Well, a broker might can shop your deal and find you a 100% down deal. I'm sorry, 100% down, 100% fully funded deal for you on your rental property, which is what I was looking for in my first two deals.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Okay, I have more questions, but first let's go to line one and talk to Todd, who is calling from Georgia. Todd, welcome to Real Life Real Estates.
Hello, good to be with you.
Good to have you.
I want to back up everything that Robert said. I started doing my first portfolio loans about 30 years ago, and we've done hundreds of them. And the biggest reason for doing them is, you, number one, each deal can be the same. So what I mean by that is, I know hundreds of investors who have done creative financing their whole career because all the gurus told them to do creative financing, don't ever go to a bank. And then 10 years later, you ask them something about one of their properties. They're like, well, you know, I actually can't remember what the terms are on that deal. I'd have to go look it up. I can't remember if I optioned that or if we owner financed it or it was a net lease or what it was. And they can't remember their deals. With a bank, when you do bank loans, every deal's the same. You know you have a 30-year mortgage, and you know it's a fixed rate. And it doesn't matter if it's a recession or good times, you still know what your rate was on that loan, and you know it's fixed for 30 years. So that what that enables you to do is it enables you to scale much faster. We could close 8 loans at a time. We could buy 8 properties, and in the time I heard you talk Monday night about going to a lady's living room and hearing her story about her property that you're trying to buy from her and work out her all her issues, and the time you spent in that living room, I could have negotiated and closed on 8 loans on 8 properties.
If you could have found 8 good deals in today's market, that is all at the same time. That is absolutely true. And it is true that if you're going to do any kind of creative finance sort of deal, you have got to keep records. I'm the same way. I mean, I can tell you whether this one was a master lease or that one was a wrap mortgage or whatever. But do I remember what the rate was? Do I remember when the option expires? I do not, but I don't have to because I have electronic calendars and I have reminders and I have all of those sorts of, you know, things in place to that if I need the information, I can get the information. And I suspect that the way you make your payments is probably like some kind of automatic payment from QuickBooks. Yeah, so's mine.
Yeah.
It's just on auto pay to Shirley over here and then Bob the private lender over here and so on. So I don't know, man. I back in the day when, you know, you could buy packages of properties from Fannie and FHA and folks like that, literally 8 at a time.
You can buy portfolios of houses from new builders now.
Well, yeah.
Most of the largest new builders are selling most of their houses as build to rent in packages to investors.
Yep, and if that is your game, because I assume that this is, it's more or less full price, but you're buying it on the cash flow, right?
It's discounted from full price because if you're buying 8 or 10 at a time, they give you a big discount. They don't have any sales fee involved, so they don't have sales offices anymore in those subdivisions,
mm-hmm.
so they can sell them at a discount, and mm-hmm. and you can cash flow from day one if you get correct loan terms.
Mm-hmm.
One comment about what Robert said on portfolio lenders, we found the opposite to be true. We went to large mortgage lenders who have whole portfolio loans in their own portfolio, a certain percentage of them that they don't resell, and they love to do these types of loans and keep them in house.
Okay, when you say large money lenders, are you talking about like large banks, large DSCR lenders? What do you mean when you say large
mortgage lenders that tend to be, they might be owned by a bank, but they don't have necessarily the bank's name on them,
mm-hmm.
but they might be a subsidiary of the bank. But if you go to your mortgage broker, they can tell you, you know, literally dozens of companies that will do real estate loans and keep them in their own portfolio.
Okay. So that, and that's probably hidden from the general public because the general public never knows it because they only buy one property at a time and that's not what these places are looking for.
Exactly.
Okay. All right. Well, Todd, you taught me something about how the bigger scale single family home lending market works. And Robert, you got one on
Todd
your
gave
side.
Me a point.
You got one
point
on you got
Robert.
One
Thanks,
point.
Todd.
Yes. All right. Thank
Dina,
you.
I love your advice, but I got to go with Robert on this one for scale and easy. And the way we set up initially was you get a line of credit with a local bank to acquire them typically, and then we go shop for the permanent loan, and we pay off the local lender.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, Todd, I'll remember this. Okay. Don't worry. We'll see each other again someday, and I'll be like, Todd, you remember?
Yep.
Do you remember that time that you called my radio show and you agreed.
You're gonna dump me off of the Summit Group, aren't you?
That's right. Right now, let me get in there. All right. Thanks for your call, Todd. I appreciate it. Okay. So, Robert, I have to counter that with an email that I got from JC in Las Vegas, who says, yes, if you already have substantial income, assets, and excellent credit, you can make borrowing from banks look easy, but that is insurmountable to the average person lacking these things. Also, to say that relationships with banks are a thing is just not true. Relationships are with individuals, not with institutions. People at the institutions change over time and are typically subject to the policies of the institution, regardless of individual relationships. And then sent me a graph from Statista, it looks like, that says the number of banking institutions has declined significantly since 2000. That has accelerated since the 2010s. The number of banking institutions has declined by more than 2,300 during the last 20 years, most of it happening in the past 10. And that quote is from the Cleveland Fed. So if I can summarize that, I think what he's saying is, well, that's good for you, Robert. You probably have good credit and a job. Some of us don't. And also, it seems to be thinking that banks are going the way of at least small banks might be going the way of the dinosaur. You have any?
Yeah, so what that leaves out, and was one of my points to bring up, was there are still 4,000 plus banks. Yes, there used to be 6,500. That doesn't matter. There's still 4,000. And if Bank A doesn't loan to you, go across the street to Bank B. You might have more resources than you realize. But if you've got a 420 credit score and no job, no income, no hope of repayment, and no experience, well, yeah, you're probably not going to go get a loan there.
You also probably shouldn't get a private loan or agree to make a seller payment if you have no ability to repay.
I mean, if it weren't for bad luck, there'd be no luck at all, it sounded like. But, okay, I'm sorry. Maybe get another job picking up cans on the side of the road and recycling. I don't know.
I'm taking that as a point to my side and calling it even. We need to take another quick break. When we come back, Robert, I want to talk a little bit more about this process that you go through with these banks, because it sounds really different than the way most people approach them and might be the secret to your success. You're listening to Real Life Real Estate Investing. If you have questions about borrowing money from banks, at this point, probably should send them in via email to vinaradio@gmail.com. Welcome back to Real Life Real Estate Investing. I'm your host, Vina Jones-Cox. Not winning, but holding my own in the debate about, is it really better to go to banks and borrow money for your real estate transactions? And Robert, I'm gonna shortcut something that I meant to talk about, but we're running out of time. And that is, a lot of your bank transactions these days are looking toward bigger deals. You're sort of moving over into the commercial, multifamily, private placement, you know, only available to sophisticated folks kind of investment. And so you're not really in the market for a loan on a house anymore. You're in the market for large lines of credit, but still with these smaller banks. And you have been successful thus far in your early attempts to do that. But these are mostly, I gather, with banks that you have relatively lengthy relationships with. That you actually started this process back when it was just single family homes.
Yes and no. I'm always looking for new lenders. I just established a new relationship within the last 90 days with one that has now emailed me today and has offered me 9 different products. At my request, I said, tell me what else you can tell me. 9 different things that I can use to build my business from this new bank. This isn't a multi-year relationship. Now, one of the ones you mentioned, line of credit, that particular banker has moved 4 or 5 different times through acquisitions or whatever. he and I have known each other a long time. So that's one example. You're right about that JC that said that. It is with him, the relationships with him. But remember, he is selling the relationship to his boss. He's selling me as a credible borrower to the boss. Mm-hmm. So then as the deals get bigger over time, I've got someone advocating for me. So if I am starting new with this new bank within the last 90 days, it's still the same process I've always used. I've put together a credibility package. Here's who I am. Here's what I've done. Here's a little bit about me. And here's my
plans. I knew it. I knew there was something else here. I knew you were not wandering into the bank and saying, hey, can I talk to whoever's in charge of loans here? You're going and selling yourself to them.
Well, I'm going in first to let them sell to me. I used to be nervous about it in the very beginning, and then I learned they only make a profit if they loan me money. So I actually have the upper hand, and so do all the listeners. They have to loan to us to stay profitable. They want to loan to us. So we have the upper hand. We just need to find a place that's a match. Do I want to work with them? Do they have the products and services that I like? Does their online banking actually work? Can they do wire transfers? Can they do ACH from tenant bank accounts if that's something that's important to me? Can they finance bigger deals? Can they give me a home equity line of credit on my house if that's important to me? So I'm letting them sell me on why I should open up an account there, because I don't open an account lightly anymore.
Okay, so the account, the checking account is the worm on the hook. It's the...
Oh, yeah.
It's the I will do this now that you have convinced me that we can do business together.
Mm-hmm.
Because
that's some money in it. It can be $500, $1,000, whatever. Find out what it is and start with that and then begin to build that with time.
Mm-hmm.
If you're ready with a deal right now, then go ahead and lay out the terms of the deal you've got and see if that's something they would approve, even if it's not necessarily under contract. See, this is what I'm looking at. This is the kind of deal I do. Does this work for you? Or if not, why not? And then shut up and listen. They will tell you if it'll work or not. Because remember, their incentive is to loan you money to make a profit. They want to work with you.
Well, and I think...
They're just taking advantage of it.
I think a lot of people really are. I'm intimidated to walk into a bank and say, you know, how can we do business together? Partly because I just have, you know, limited experience doing that. But this idea of... You mentioned credibility package, and unfortunately, we do not have time to. I want to know everything that's in that, and we don't have time to get into that. But the relationship implies I'm not just coming to you when I need money. I'm establishing a relationship.
Correct.
I'm giving you something you want, which is a checking account. We're going to do business together. But is it like? Now Robert shows up when he needs something, because like if I'm in a private lender borrower relationship and the only time they talk to me is when they need something, it feels a little one-sided to me.
Oh, I come up with reasons to go in there. My goal is if I can go into that branch and I don't need to show ID, then I'm showing up with the right frequency. I'll come up with a check to cash, or I need to change a $10 bill into ones. I'll just make up some reason to go in there and talk to the people. And in my two examples, those are teller relationships, sure, but the people on the carpet will see you. Now, don't go during lunch, because they're out taking lunch too. Go when they're there, and then after you've done your teller business, you legitimately come in because you had business, then walk over there and talk to your new banker friend and continue to build that relationship. It's just that simple. They're people like us. They've got the same needs and goals and concerns and worries just like us. They're just people too.
Okay, I have one other question sitting in the inbox, and this is from Russell in Connecticut. And if my computer had not gone to sleep, I would be able to see that. Here it is. So you actually already answered his first question, which is small, medium, or large-sized banks. The second question has to do with so many banks that are online now and so few people actually bank at a local branch anymore. Do we need to go bank at a local branch so that we can have these relationships?
Yes. That's like saying quit using direct mail because no one does it. you'll absolutely get even more attention when you go in now. And there'll be candy in the banker's candy jar when you show up, because all the other people are banking online and not coming in there and eating it up. The banker will have more time to spend with you, and they welcome that opportunity to build a relationship. Absolutely, yes, go in. It's even better to do it now in person.
Very interesting. So I have a question to ask listeners, and I'd like you guys to respond to this at vinaradio@gmail.com. Are there enough of you who would just rather do the simple thing and go build a relationship? Well, Robert Simple, and go to a bank and build a relationship and go to another bank and build a relationship and just be able to borrow all your money kind of conventionally, that if we did an online class about the details of that, about, you know, which banks, what does a credibility kit look like, what kind of ongoing communication would you have, that you would attend that class if it was online and if it was, you know, relatively inexpensive? If the answer is yes, can you send that to vinaradio@gmail.com, and you can just say, bank class yes, because, you know, being deeply involved in the...
Well, wait a minute. Let me just jump in and make an offer. What if I showed my sample bank package and taught you how I use it? Maybe that's the better question.
Well, that would be easier. It would be way easier if I could just copy yours and put my stuff in it than it would for me to put together a whole new credibility kit all by myself.
Well, if I won today's debate and you asked nicely, then I might do it.
Well, you didn't win. And I'm not sure if I can ask nicely, but, you know, we'll see. We'll see if there's enough interest. You know, if we get 25, 30 people that would be interested in something like that, we can certainly schedule that for an online seminar coming up here pretty shortly. So, Robert, thank you for your time. I'm sorry you didn't win the debate, but I do appreciate...
My bad luck.
I do appreciate your time, and I think you did actually give people a lot to think about in terms of actually building relationships with banks. So we will be back next week with more information to put you on the path to financial independence through real estate investing. Until then, happy investing.